All right, welcome back, folks, again. And Jeffrey Weiss with me in the studio. Jeffrey's a poli-sci prof at Des Moines Area Community College. And Mark Jacob with me, with us on the phone, the former Metro editor of the Chicago Tribune and also the news editor for the Chicago Sun-Times Sunday edition. Gentlemen, we've had quite a deep conversation here. I want to kind of airing our grievances about just how bad things are. I do want to get into what we can do to make it better. But I do want to first kind of lay out my understanding of, we talked a little bit about Rush Limbaugh in the last segment. Yeah, and again, I think Mark, you made a really, really good point. There were right-wing interests with money that were very willing to fund Limbaugh, and generally speaking, to fund radical right-wing radio. Right. When I first got started in radio, it was almost 17 years ago, and I was on a big station. I was on a station that covered about one-third of the Iowa counties. And I was not offered a position on that station as a paid employee. If I'd been a right-wing voice working for WHO or some other station, I would have been paid very nicely, in fact. But instead of being paid, I actually had to broker the time. So I had to pay $350 for a one-hour show four times a week, total for the year, about $72,500 that I had to raise through advertising. And if I raised anything beyond that, then I got paid. And I did raise a bit beyond that, not a lot. But it seems like a huge mistake on the part of progressive causes not to want to support voices on the airwaves that, you know, that tend to promote progressive values. And I mean, prior to Limbaugh, talk radio was mostly voices on the left. Think Howard Stern. And think, I forget the guy's name, the guy in Colorado who was shot to death, in fact, by an angry listener who didn't like...
Alan Berg?
Yes, that's exactly right, yes. I mean, the voices on the radio prior to Limbaugh were progressive. Limbaugh was a minority when he got started. But you make a really good point. He got funded. along with that, you had the Fairness Doctrine being abolished under Ronald Reagan. And then Bill Clinton, who I will never understand why Bill Clinton thought it was a good idea to sign the Telecommunications Act in 1996, allowing big corporations to own multiple signals in any one market. And again, assuring that a handful of small and very right-wing companies could buy up all the big signals. And that's one reason my show is on about a dozen stations, but they're all smaller community-owned stations because the commercial stations won't have it because they're all owned by these big companies. Public radio is not interested, or as I call it, semi-public radio. So, I mean, that's kind of the lay of the land with radio. And I think it's underestimated by the left how really, really important radio has been to especially the working class, who are often busy with their hands or in their feet, but they get their ears available and they can listen to stuff.
We're driving around.
Driving around.
Appointment to the next.
So there's my rant. Have at it.
Well, let me say something about that. It's yes, radio, but yes, a lot of things. I mean, yes to YouTube shows, yes to to Substack newsletters. What the CEO of Courier, which is the news outfit that I consult with and write for, they Tara McGowan, she makes a really good point that the Democratic Party has, like, every 4 years, they will spend 3 months just blanketing TV with all these advertisements, and it's just, they will spend millions and millions on advertisements 3 months every 4 years or every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the time, they're almost invisible.
Yep.
And the right wing has very smartly diversified, very smartly been more active in radio, been more active on, newsletters and on YouTube, especially where you have a lot of, podcasters, right-wing kind of lying propaganda podcasters. And the thing about that is that they reach people who are not inherently political, people
right.
who don't really care much about politics, but they vote anyway. So they can be influenced, but the left has done a really poor job for decades, the right wing has strategically outmaneuvered them.
And they continue to do a poor job. For the life of me, I cannot understand why, when the Democratic Party controls Congress, why they don't push to reinstate the Fairness Doctrine, why they don't push to repeal elements of the 1996 Telecommunications Act, and why they don't try to find more opportunities to be, like you said, regularly and consistently getting their message across to the public, not once in a big push every 3 months before an election.
Right, right. Well, so can you explain to me why you think the Fairness Doctrine would be better?
Because it would require that if you're going to air certain content of a particular political perspective, you would be required to provide some time to a countervailing perspective.
Okay, but I mean, isn't that the issue that came up with Colbert and the Tallarico interview?
I'm not sure that's. You could argue that. Yeah, actually, yeah, you could argue that the late night comics are pretty solidly left, but those media outlets that run them certainly have programming that offer a countervailing perspective.
So it wouldn't have to be on the same show. It
right.
Could just be
right.
It's just like somewhere on that outlet.
Yeah, and even still, it used to be. I mean, when I was first doing interviews on WHO Radio here in Des Moines. That's the megawatt. That's the megaphone that goes from one end of the state to the other, and I would come on a very conservative talk show, run by Jan Michelson, and we would disagree, but when he would have to be off the air for some reason, I think a half dozen times I was the guest host. They would never ever do that these days. I mean, they won't ever have any voice that's not very consistent and in lockstep with the Republican Party perspective on that station, period. So I think the Fairness Doctrine would be really helpful.
Wouldn't it be hard to, I mean, I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate here. Wouldn't it be difficult to implement or to monitor or to, I mean, wouldn't it lead to 1,000 lawsuits?
I don't know. It worked before 1984.
Yeah,
well, before Reagan.
We're in a different place now as far as both lawsuits, political lawsuits, aren't we?
Sadly, yes, but at least the lawyers are getting rich.
Yes, they are. Yeah. Trump's lawyers.
Yeah.
I don't think Stephen Colbert is probably left, by the way. He's probably a moderate center-right, or if we're honest about it. But I'm just sort of pushing back on the labels. I mean, really, there isn't much of a left in the United States. I don't know where they're at. But, a liberal like Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton is a solid conservative. I mean, it's in most of Europe, or even, a Bernie Sanders is comfortable in the Financial Times, So, I'm just throwing that out there in terms of the terminology. But I still think, though, that we would need to give more weight to if somebody was on the left and their critique was really against big money, that their challenge would be how to reach the masses because of advertising. But I still take both of your argument real strong that that progressive people, or at least the Democratic Party, which is probably the last people to actually understand that their base is democratic socialist,
right.
that they should do more. If that makes sense,
right.
But. Yeah, that they should definitely do more. And didn't you get taken off of that radio ad when it was bought by somebody?
Yeah,
it was bought by
Cumulus.
That was it, right?
Yeah, well, it was already owned by a big company,
okay.
But a smaller
yeah.
big company, and one that didn't mind some diversity. There were 24 hours of talk radio a day.
Yeah.
4 hours were more progressive. So there was some balance.
Yeah.
Me and then a guy named Bradshaw had a 3-hour program where he would invite every radical right-wing listener to call in and beat him up, and he would just have his way with the arguments. But you don't have that anymore.
No, and, that was a rarity.
Again, I don't understand the Democratic Party's lack of willingness to confront the issue.
Sure.
Regarding Colbert, I don't know how you want to label him. I don't know if I can even go along with what Jeffrey's description of that is, but he's about to be off the air. I mean, as of next month, CBS is gonna can him. So, I mean, there's more consolidation within the even within that realm of the media. But so, what do we do, Mark? How do we fix it? You have all the answers, right?
Yeah, sure. I've got just a list. Write it down. No, they, I mean, how do we? What, depends what it is. If we're talking about, you know, democracy or how to protect it, people need to get out there and get active. I mean, now they need to go to protests. They need to call their members of Congress, especially if they live in a district that doesn't vote the way they want to, where the member of Congress doesn't. They need these. Members of Congress need to hear from constituents because it does matter. And you can either write them an email on their, you know, the link is on their website most of the time, or you can call them. There's a switchboard, in, you know, at the Capitol. You do that. You need to, people need to get their family and friends to understand what's going on right now, because what's going on right now is not normal. This is not like normal politics that everyone grew up with. This is the president of the United States and a party that is enabling him, trying to seize as much political power as they can get their hands on. There's no separation of powers anymore. Mm-hmm. They are, Trump is deciding who gets money, who's how to spend money, which isn't his job at all. Mm-hmm. You're getting you got some masked people, masked federal agents, murdered two people in Minnesota in recent months. You've got Trump like taking big money payments from people, and then suddenly they end up with pardons from their federal convictions. You get that there's this giant corrupt organization. The Trump administration is a corrupt organization. I mean, it's designed to make Trump money, and part of doing that means using government to profit from, and that's why he wants to be a mob boss slash dictator. And people need to tell their family and friends about this and get them to vote the right way.
And it seems like one thing we should do as well is encourage people. And I think it's important to read a diversity of media. I mean, I read The Economist. You know, I listen to WHO Radio. Charles, mm-hmm.
I agree with you. Yeah. I mean, people need to. I don't really like it when. You know, when people just, you know, they get in this cocoon where they just hear the same stuff that they always, right. You know, that we just get their beliefs reinforced. It's nice. It's really healthy for a human being to be told something, to be disabused of their assumptions that may not
right,
be true.
Right, right, right. And it's also important that we support media outlets that maybe not traditional, like what you're doing with Substack. I mean, that's a... Though there's more and more of that out there, people having their own podcasts, their own
right.
radio shows, their own columns, and we need to support and encourage that.
Yeah, and I want to.
Well, mine's free. Stop the Presses is free. So okay.
Good.
So Google Stop the Presses and Mark Jacob without an S at the end of my name, and
without
just
an S.
Jacob.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, and you'll find it and join it. If you like it, fine. If you think it's stupid, you can unsubscribe with one click.
Okay, yeah, and I wanted to really thank you, Mark, because as somebody who's done a lot of media analysis and wrote my thesis on the New York Times coverage of Dr. King and Malcolm X, the work you're doing with Stop the Presses and also with Courier is very important because there's really very few outlets that do real good media analysis. So it's a joy to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Mark, and thank you, Jeffrey.